On August 6, 1945, the United States became the first and so far only nation to use a nuclear weapon in wartime. That was the day that Enola Gay dropped a bomb, codenamed Little Boy, that decimated the Japanese city of Hiroshima. But Hiroshima didn't have to happen. And in 1991, I met a man who tried to prevent it. His name was Martin Quigley. In World War II, he worked for the Office of Strategic Services, or OSS, the forerunner to the CIA.
I had a broad mandate on my OSS. In Rome, I was to develop strategic intelligence useful for the prosecution of the war. But before I went overseas, General Donovan gave me a special assignment in addition to the broad mandate, and that was at the right time try to open up communications looking to the surrender of the Japanese. I was given a very wide discretion. I could tell people I was connected with OSS or not as I wished in Rome. When the Germans surrendered in early May of 1945, I decided the time was opportune to try to carry out Donovan's instructions.
Now, Quigley told me in 1991 that in finding and recruiting just the right person to try to get a message to Tokyo, he had a critical choice to make.
I had three possibilities. One was the Jesuit, the senior American Jesuit in Rome, Father Vincent McCormick. He was of great use to me in many ways. Number two was Pope Pius XII's closest lay friend, an architect. The third one of the three that I considered was the one I zeroed in on, was a young Vatican diplomat by the name of Vagnazzi. Vagnazzi, I felt, was the perfect contact. In my contacts with him, developing him as a source unknown to him, I learned that he dwelled in the same Vatican residence building in which dwelled the ecclesiastical advisor to the Japanese mission, a Father Tamazawa, and I learned they were friendly enough to take meals together from time to time. So, having made that decision, I had to get Vagnazzi, who had visited me before, get him to my apartment in a matter of a few hours. I had to do several things. I had to tell him I was OSS, tell him how I wanted to reach the Japanese mission for communications looking to peace, and finally convince him that he was the one and only person ideal to do it. He put his career on the line and decided that the cause of peace was more important than his diplomatic career, because he could have had his head immediately chopped off once it ever came out. He carried my words through Tamazawa to Harada and Kaneyama.
So Quigley got secret messages through his contacts to the Japanese foreign ministry in the form of two diplomatic cables.
Harada's two cables were encoded at the Vatican, transmitted by Vatican radio, unknown because they were coded, where they were picked up by the Japanese big station in Bern, Switzerland, and relayed directly to Tokyo. Well, in Tokyo, the coded message was decoded and presented in Japanese at the Foreign Office intended for the foreign minister. Meanwhile, unknown to me, and certainly to the Japanese, our government was intercepting, through the magic system, was intercepting these communications. Now, the mystery in the book, and there's an island on my mystery bill, Nobody knows what happened to these messages in either Washington or Tokyo. All I have been able to learn is that it was extraordinary, un-Japanese, for them not to have even acknowledged those two cables. And what's a reflection, perhaps, of Japanese thoroughness, once I asked for these two cables, I received them promptly from them. And then when I had compared their text in Japanese, translated with the magic intercepts in Washington, well, despite all those convolutions of language and coding and decoding, the texts are virtually identical.
In any case, the communication continued, and Martin Quigley then put his mark on history.
During the negotiation, or whatever you want to call it, I was asked to indicate what the terms of surrender might be. There was no chance to get instructions further from Washington, but to carry on, because if I said I couldn't say anything, I knew the communication link would be broken. So I had to come up with the terms. And the interesting thing historically is the terms I came up with were the actual ones. That is, occupation by American forces of Japan. The emperor could stay if the Japanese people wanted him to stay. And thirdly, of the three, we would not annex any of their territory permanently. Now, it turns out the big hang-up was the question of unconditional surrender. But I guessed that surrender would be conditional, and it isn't too generally known, but historically it's been documented that the Japanese did not surrender after the two bombs until they had received, via Switzerland, an agreement that the emperor would not be deposed.
This is a fascinating story. Why haven't I heard about this before?
Well, when I was involved in these matters on instructions of General Donovan during World War II, I assumed that this would be forever secret. But some years ago, our own government, in declassifying documents for a British historian, revealed my identity, and I figured that 40 or 45 years is as close as forever as we're ever going to reach in this human existence.
Martin Quigley died in 2011 at age 93. I'm Bill Thompson, and now I've heard everything.